So this is episode 37 and a half of the Shawnakie. And as much as I like this essay and feel that it's important that I share it, I wish I'd never needed to write it. Last weekend, I made some wonderful new friends. I met a good number of the TSFPN podcasters face-to-face, and it was wonderful. In particular, I spent a great deal of time with Derek of Skepticality, and we hit it off like a house on fire. I'm really looking forward to a long and enduring friendship with this guy. But Thursday night, he had an aneurysm and is now in a coma. By last report, his condition is improving, but he's going to be in intensive care for a couple of weeks. After that, well, I have faith. For those of you who have not listened to Skepticality, it's a talk show with some pretty impressive guests where Derek and Swoopy, his co-host, go after bad science. It's one of the bigger podcasts and very rational. When I heard Swoopy announcing to her audience what had happened, it just about broke my heart. And one line in particular. I paraphrase. Derek and I are both big on science, and I hope science comes through for us. Sure, science helps. But this is a situation that calls for faith. And I'm disgusted with the way both religious and scientific loudmouths comport themselves in the media, because it makes things confusing at times like this, when they should be very clear. So I wrote this for a little clarity. I also wrote it for Swoopy and told her she could have it for the Skepticality feed if she wanted it. A podcast is a hungry beast, and the thought of her worrying about putting on another podcast at such a time, well, it was the only thing I could think to do that might help. Anyway, she said we should put it out on both feeds. So here it is. I have spent a grand total of 3 days with Derek. But in those 3 days, our conversations totaled at least 15 hours. We had dinner the night before all this happened, sat out on the patio, and wound up closing down the place. The air was 4 parts summer and 1 part fall, stirred by a light breeze. And we troubled the waitstaff because, honestly, who talks like this? Eventually, they closed the place down and left us, and we were still going strong. It wasn't idle banter or gossip either. We were covering ground, rife with ideas and possibilities, exchanging information, excited to find somebody to actually talk with instead of to. So when I heard he was in a coma, my eyes got watery, my neck got stiff, and I said to myself, no. I'm holding out for a better offer. Life's just going to have to do better than that. This is not the end of the story. We have too much left to say and do. And that was the beginning of my faith that Derek would recover and that we would laugh together again. Or hold up some portion of the world and ask each other, what exactly is going on here? Did you notice that? That's really something. What do you think it means? Curiosity and wonder. Now the word faith will raise some hackles, I'm sure. And that's good. There are those who view my friend's recovery as a matter of pure science. I'm sure none of them are doctors. I am not overly religious or medical, but I am a storyteller. And that means that I turn to stories to prove and convey difficult and subtle ideas. Ideas that are often too tenuous to withstand the rigor of scientific investigation. So I've written a story to try and prove to skeptics that faith and science are not antagonists, but rather co-conspirators. I speak not of the faith of modern Christianity, or the rock star science thrust upon us by the atomic age, but the faith that sustains long endeavors when they seem the most hopeless, and the science that is done not for material reward or tactical advantage, but from humankind's deepest desires to understand the world around us. For this is the faith and the science that changes the world. Strike into the history of science and mathematics anywhere you like, and you find faith. From the mysticism of the Pythagoreans drunk on the music of the spheres, to Newton, whose calculus gave us command of the infinite, even though he spent most of his life attempting to change lead into gold. Perhaps less comprehensible in terms of mathematics, but more comprehensible in terms of present-day sacrifice, is Andrew Wiles' proof of Fermat's last theorem. I don't pretend to understand any of the math, but the story of how Wiles solved this difficult problem is familiar. He first tried to solve Fermat as a 10-year-old boy. Later in life, something called the Shimura Taniyama conjecture gave him a clue that it might be possible. He abandoned all his other research and for 7 years concentrated solely on Fermat. A few days after he was married, he reportedly told his wife that he only had time for his problem and his family, remarking further that the best way for him to relax was with young children, because they simply weren't interested in Fermat. A man obsessed? Oh yeah. And after 7 years, he announced that he had at last discovered a proof to Fermat's last theorem. But when it was published, an error was discovered. He had failed. Yet still, he persisted. In September of the next year, he gave it one last try. Here's how he described the experience. Suddenly, totally, unexpectedly, I had this incredible revelation. It was the most important moment of my working life. Nothing I ever do again. It was so indescribably beautiful. It was so simple and elegant. And I just stared in disbelief for 20 minutes. Then during the day, I walked around the department. I'd keep coming back to my desk to see if it was still there. It was still there. The Journal of the American Mathematical Society summed it up like this. Weil's work is highly original, a technical tour de force, and a monument to individual perseverance. I don't suggest divine revelation as the source of Weil's solution. Far from it. But I submit that his perseverance was the direct result of faith, a belief in that which cannot be proven. Namely, that he could provide a proof for Fermat's last theorem, where so many had failed. And the need to focus might not have been the only reason he withdrew from the world to work on it. The history of the others who had tried to prove Fermat could well fill the mathematician's hall of crackpot fame. In the end, faith is no more or no less irrational than a hammer. If you use a hammer to pound nails, you're rational. If you use a hammer to paint your house, well, I'm going to cross to the other side of the street when I see you coming. Faith is merely a tool of the spirit, and I use faith to avert despair. And for those of you whose science would demand that you succumb to despair or some level of emotional numbness and self-defense, I think you make a mistake. But I don't know for sure. I can't prove it. But I sure am looking forward to talking to Derek about it in a couple of weeks. For the Shaughnessy and pinch hitting for skepticality, I'm Patrick McLean.